And I'm Dennis O'Hare, and we now continue our series called Under Construction. All this week, we've been looking at Atlanta's sports stadiums from different angles. And yesterday, we talked about stadium sustainability with Professor Tim Kellison, who believes that big mega stadiums are antithetical to green building. Well, listener Patrick Thompson of Woodstock, Georgia, had this to say afterward.
Your comments about sustainability around stadiums today missed a huge point, and that is especially around taxpayer money. You don't do sustainability just because it's a new stadium or new construction or whatever. You do it to save money. And anyone who's running a stadium, especially with taxpayer dollars, should be concerned about saving the public's money. Thank you.
And to hear more of what you all think about this, our own producer, Mary Clara Kelly, recently went out to the actual site of the new Atlanta Falcons stadium.
My name is LeVar Dupree. I mean, you know, ever since they built it, I mean, it's great. It's cool because, you know what I'm saying, it's something new to a new addition to Atlanta, you know what I'm saying. Once they open it, I'm planning on going there, you know what I'm saying, because I know they're supposed to be having a new soccer team, too, so I'm pretty excited about the soccer team, so I want to make sure I be there to see it when it first start, you know. So it's pretty great. I like it.
My name is Tyrone Mason. The stadium that they had was pretty decent. I think they should have spent the money on something else much better.
I'm ATL for life. Name is Larry McNeil. You know, they're going to get the Super Bowl here one day because of that new stadium. It's bigger, you know, just like the new one New Orleans got. To compete with them, you got to get a bigger stadium. You got to keep up with it.
I'm Katrina Hicks Lockhart. I love football, but not too much soccer, but football. I think it's cool. They're doing a real good job. I like it. I think it'd be better for the people that are going to be moving here and close to their homes or whatever. So it's cool, it's okay.
My name is R.B. Dean. I'm thinking, what are they doing with the old stadium, which is not that old. Since I'm a native Atlanta, new things, I'm a tourist in my own hometown. So much has changed.
We know that feeling, yeah. Well, now as we continue our series, we turn to the history of Atlanta's stadiums. The city's had a number of relationships with its sports stadiums, and those relationships usually do not end quietly. No, that's not the sound of a technical difficulty. It's the implosion of the old Atlanta Fulton County Stadium back in 1997. Ponce de Leon Park and the Omni Coliseum are other arenas that have disappeared from the Atlanta landscape after thousands had flocked to them to watch baseball or basketball or other sports.
And so now as we turn back the clock to revisit the good old days of Atlanta sports stadiums, we're joined now by Georgia State University history professor Cliff Kuhn to discuss the history of Atlanta's stadiums. Professor Kuhn, thanks for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Rose.
Now, before we came on, I had a question. I was wondering if Bobby Dodd was the oldest just period sports stadium, period, here in the Atlanta area. Is that the oldest one?
It's still standing, yes.
Yeah.
Bobby Dodd was built in the early 19-teens and then added on. Originally had a capacity of only 5,000, I believe. And then in the 20s, they expanded to about 30,000 and to 50-something thousand later on. So that would be the oldest still existing stadium. It celebrated its centennial a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm.
And Atlanta's first major stadium, Ponce de Leon Park, where exactly was that located?
It was located right where the Sears building is on Ponce de Leon. There was an amusement park called Ponce de Leon Springs. Actually, it was across the street from the Sears building. Where the Sears building was, there was an amusement park that dated back to the 19th century. It was Ponce de Leon Springs. It was kind of a Coney Island kind of amusement park, in a sense, with rides and lakes, and you could go picnicking there. The streetcar went out there, and the streetcars were very much involved in the early development of the parks because they would take riders there, and the streetcar line would end at the end of the line, and so the streetcars would be filled all the way to the end of the line, and streetcars were very invested in the park. So that was Ponce de Leon Park, originated in 1907. burned down in 1923, was rebuilt on the same site in 1924 and lasted until 1965.
Let's go back to the early, at the turn of the century there. What was game day like? Set the demographics for us. Who was there and who was playing?
Game day would have been very bustling. The streetcar would have taken people there. There would be other retail right around there. Up the street, there was a barbecue place called the Pig and Whistle, very popular. In the 20s and 30s, the well-known blues musician Blind Willie McTell would perform at the Pig and Whistle to the crowds coming in and out of the ballpark. The park would have been strictly segregated. Mm-hmm. White fans on the right, I can't remember which was the right field line or the left field line. And you had the train, the Southern Railroad, going right through there with the magnolia tree right in the middle of center field. That magnolia tree still exists. It's now part of the Beltline. And there were stories about what was the longest home run ever hit.
I was just about to ask you about that.
We have talked about that. Yeah.
Well, it depended whether you're in the black community or white community, because in the black community, the story went that Josh Gibson, the famous player for the Homestead Grays, Pittsburgh Homestead Grays, hit a home run that was so far that it landed on a coal train carrying coal to Chattanooga and didn't land in the ground for 100 miles later. The same story was told in the white community about Bob Montag, who was a star for the Atlanta Crackers. So depending on what side of the color line you stood, you know, it was either Josh Gibson or Bob Montag or both of them.
Is either story true or do we know?
I do not know. I do know that Babe Ruth came through in an exhibition and hit home runs into the magnolia tree.
And Jackie Robinson, of course, played there. And that was a very significant event in not just the history of Ponce de Leon, but in Atlanta sports history.
That's right. It's probably the first formal professional desegregated game in the history of Atlanta. It's in April 1949. The Brooklyn Dodgers, after spring training, with both Jackie Robinson and by that time Roy Campanella as well, are taking the train back up to Brooklyn, and they stop for a three-day series against the Atlanta Crackers of the Southern League at that time, the white professional team in town. And we'll talk about the black Crackers in a minute. And normally the capacity of the stadium is about 15,000, but because Jackie Robinson's there, you know, they actually have a rope in the outfield because so many fans want to see Jackie Robinson. Then one of the days they get close to 25,000, I think, you know, and the Ku Klux Klan is threatening picketing the game, and Mayor Hartsfield is right in the middle of it. It's this quite an event, and it comes off very nicely and successfully.
Now, who paid for the stadium?
Who paid for the stadium? There was a man named R.J. Spiller, who was the owner of the Crackers, who was involved in the rebuilding of the stadium. And I think, I'm not sure, but I do believe that the power company, which ran the street railways for a while, had some investment in it. And Coca-Cola Company also had some connection with the team later on in the 1940s. I'm not quite sure about who built the stadium. It was built for a fraction of the cost of stadiums today, just to give you... Another example, Herndon Stadium at Morris Brown College, very nice stadium, was built in 1948 for $400,000. Atlanta Fulton Stadium, I'm not sure, but it was built for, you know, maybe $10 million or in that ballpark, might be, pardon the pun, something like that, a fraction of what stadiums cost today.
We've come a long way since those days of a $400,000 stadium.
Yeah, Ponce de Leon Park had a capacity of about 15,000. It was a classic early 20th century ballpark.
So, Cliff, when do we start seeing more public sort of comment or involvement about people having issues with stadiums being built and who should pay for them? You know, when the Smith family owned the Falcons. I mean, when do we start seeing that?
Fulton County Stadium was built relatively with a great deal of public support in the 60s. And really, it was sort of part of Atlanta trying to become, again, pardon my pun, but a big league city, a major league city, a national city, not just a regional capital. And interestingly, there's bond issues that are passed without very much opposition at all, you know, for improvements, you know, for stadium funds. Ivan Allen, this is the way that things were kind of done in the city at that time. A very small group of men kind of ran the show. But Mayor Ivan Allen calls on Arthur Montgomery, who's head of the Coca-Cola Bottling Company here, to kind of head a new authority to kind of oversee, to develop studies and so forth for stadium construction. He calls upon Millsby Lane, who's the head of CNS Bank, to loan $5 million to this new authority for construction. It's all kind of done in this informal sort of way, but with large public approval, because it is sort of, it is a marker that the city really has arrived. And, you know, the 60s are a growth period for Atlanta. There's a new skyline. You have relatively peaceful desegregation. Tons of people are coming here. The interstate highways are building, getting built, Civic Center and the stadium. It's all part of, you know, Atlanta kind of coming of age.
And actually, one reason possibly why things are a little different now when it comes to public opinion, the Atlanta Fulton County Stadium, according to at least one source I looked at, cost about $18 million.
Yeah, that's about right. $18 million. And I don't know what that translates to. I think it probably in the low hundreds today. But, probably would be under $200 million today, and you could hardly build, you know, the first tier of a stadium for $200 million today. So, yeah, the costs have greatly expanded. Now, Fulton County Stadium, of course, was replaced the year after the Olympics. It was the baseball venue for the Olympics. And all along, Turner Field was going to, the Olympic Stadium was going to be retrofitted to accommodate the Braves later. The Braves were probably the biggest beneficiary of the Atlanta Olympics in a sense, because they didn't really have to pay too much for the retrofitting.
Yeah, and in fact, the Olympic Stadium, part of it was designed to be torn down, and then the remainder would become the baseball stadium, as you mentioned. But wasn't that remaining piece that we now know as Turner Field, wasn't it envisioned as a much more permanent home for the Braves than it turned out to be?
Oh, absolutely. At the time, it was state of the art. Even as Fulton County Stadium, this old sort of round cookie cutter, was state of the art at the time. In the early 60s, there was Shea Stadium in New York and the Astrodome and the early Busch Stadium in St. Louis that were all built around the same time. Riverfront Stadium just after that,
yeah,
in Cincinnati.
Three Rivers, I think, too.
Three Rivers, rather, that all kind of were the same mold. Turner Field was certainly state of the art in 1997.
Well, remember Stan Kasten on that opening night said this is a gift for Atlanta for decades and decades and decades to come, in terms of, look, it didn't cost you guys anything, so this is sort of your gift from the Olympics, and this is going to be around for a long, long time, and a long, long time was shortened.
That's right. And we see this kind of pressure, what's going on in other communities and other stadiums, impacting what happens here in Atlanta. And so this happened with the Omni, that it was considered not to have the amenities that a contemporary basketball arena would have. And maybe,
well, even now, Phillips Arena is being told that, and it's not anywhere near as old as the Omni was. So the shelf life is shortening, but the costs are going up.
That's right, especially, you know, when you're talking about corporate boxes and jumbotrons and build-arounds around the stadium and all of these other kinds of things, in addition to what actually goes on the field.
Well, and the Georgia Dome has only been open since 1992. I think I was there for the first pro football game played in it. That makes it 23 years old. It'll be torn down when the new Falcons Stadium is finished right nearby. Wasn't the Georgia Dome intended to last a lot longer than 23 years?
Absolutely. And the Georgia Dome itself comes about because the owner, Rankin Smith, as early as the early 80s, was talking about not wanting to share a stadium anymore with a baseball team. And
he was threatening to move.
Threatening to move to Jacksonville or elsewhere, and got this incredible deal where the legislature, you know, basically funded the Georgia Dome. Hard to imagine that today, but.
And Cliff, for fans who love the history of all of this, and, you know, growing up in St. Louis with the Busch Stadium, which had its own different.
And which is right downtown.
Right, and so. People come to Atlanta and they say, well, where's your oldest stadium? Or where's the history as it relates to the sports stadiums? They keep tearing them down. There won't be. I mean, Bobby Dodd will still be just
Bobby
the
Dodd
lone.
Bobby Dodd and Herndon Stadium.
Herndon Stadium will be the lone sort of, I guess, connection to the past if you love just the connection to the sports of yesteryear.
You know, one of the things I felt was a pivotal mistake with Fulton County was that MARTA never went there. You know, and if you go to other cities, if you go to Wrigley Field, if you go to Citi Field in New York or Yankee Stadium, oftentimes public or Busch Stadium in St. Louis, public transportation takes you right to the gate of the stadium. And the fact that MARTA did not make it to the stadium, I think, was a glaring omission.
That was a political decision at the time, given all the constituencies that wanted that rapid rail line and the money that they had, wasn't it?
That's right. I mean, they're complicated politics.
Very complicated.
About MARTA. Clearly, you're going to have even more of an issue where what I talked about earlier, that in the early 20th century, the streetcar companies actually were involved in the ownership of the stadiums and actually thought it was very lucrative for them to be connected with these ballparks, these recreation areas. And MARTA doesn't go to Fulton County Stadium or Turner Field, and we're going to have even more transit problems, I fear, when the Braves move to Cobb County.
Can you imagine if they wanted to tear down Fenway?
Oh, my.
I cannot imagine that.
I'm from that neck of the woods.
Yeah,
not Boston itself, but wow. Yes, I don't even want to think about that.
And some would argue that's a stadium that needs to be.
Some of the visiting teams, I think, feel that way. Real quickly, Cliff, you mentioned the pressure from other cities. Does it become a cycle that in the end nobody's going to win because the pressure becomes we need newer, we need more expensive to get more people to come, and then fans feel priced out, and it just eventually is going to hit critical mass, and we're going to find ourselves with stadiums that just cost too much in a way, more than politically voters are going to be willing to put up with?
Well, you wonder. I heard earlier in your earlier segment you had somebody talking about the soccer complex, soccer mm-hmm. stadium in DeKalb County. But the soccer fields are only 20 to 30,000, if that, you know, they're soccer-specific stadiums. And you might see a move to smaller kind of arenas, certainly for baseball. I think the new Braves Stadium, I won't mention its name, is going to be smaller in terms of how many seats it can fit. You know, it's all also connected with television, which I think is a real driver in all of this. One of the reasons that the Milwaukee Braves came here was because television was becoming more mm-hmm. of a factor by the late 50s, and all of a sudden TV markets were a bigger share of teams' revenue, and salaries were beginning to creep up, although a fraction of what they are today. And Milwaukee was near Chicago, and it's near Minnesota, it's near Canada, so it had a very low, small TV market. They were looking around, casting around for a bigger market.
And Cliff, as we wrap up, as a historian, is it sort of sad to see some of these the stadiums just go away? I mean, we know about the importance of maybe being able to bring the World Cup or the Super Bowl or whatever. But as a historian, you sort of seen all these great venues over the decades of just.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah,
I mean,
they
were kind of interesting architecturally, and they were connected to communities. I've been a Braves season ticket holder since 1991, and I'm not looking forward to the 2017 season, I have to be honest.
Wow. Thank you, Cliff.
Cliff Kuhn is a Georgia State University history professor. You hear him often on Morning Edition with Steve Goss. Cliff, thanks for being on Closer Look. It's been great to have you here.
Thanks, Dennis, and thanks, Rose.
And we want to hear from you. Do you have a story about your visit to one of Atlanta's now-gone sports stadiums? Call us at 404-733-0934. That's 404-733-0934. Press the number 2 and tell us your story, and we may use your comment on the air.